This is the December 8 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Joe Jansen, agricultural economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, a member of the FarmDoc team, and he'll be a participant at next week's Farm Assets Conference in Champaign. I'll tell you how to join that in just a moment. We'll also talk today with Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. He is in Morton, Illinois, and we'll be joined by Sherman Newland as well from Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online at willag.org, willag.org. Joe Jansen is an agricultural economist, part of the FarmDoc team at the University of Illinois. Hi, Joe. Thank you for being with us. Up front, also, thank you for joining the Farm Assets Conference next week at the iHotel. If folks want to be there with us, they can. All they have to do is visit farmdocdaily.illinois.edu or willag.org and click register, but do it today. Pre-registration will close over the weekend. Prices will go up after that, so if you want to register and for the discounted pre-registration price, do that as soon as possible. Again, Joe, I'm really glad that you and Nick Paulson both will be there. I think you're going to run through some crop budgets for next year, and of course, you're going to do some price projections, and you'll have supply and demand tables as well, which is what we're going to talk about today, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, we're looking forward to presenting at Farm Assets and being part of a great program that you've put together. For that, it's going to be a good time. I encourage everyone to join us in Champaign.
Yeah, again, willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu to buy your tickets today. Do that before the weekend's out. Prices are going to go up because, well, our costs go up as we get closer, and the meals and things change just a little bit with the hotel. Now, let's talk about this morning's USDA report. The November report is simply a WASD, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. So generally speaking, we don't see changes in yield and or acreage. USDA holds those until January. We'll talk more about that in a second. But it does assess what's happening on the global stage. Can you tell me about changes that may have taken place in the corn, soybean, and wheat supply and demand tables?
Yeah, I think this is 1 month, the December WASD, where we typically don't see a lot of change in the domestic balance sheet. We did see a little adjustment in corn export number for the U.S., bumping that up just a little bit, but really didn't make a meaningful difference in the sort of U.S. supply and demand balance. But where we might see sort of more is in South American corn and soybean supply and demand, particularly production numbers in Brazil and Argentina. In the report this month, we saw USDA drop its soybean production number for Brazil by 2 million metric tons. That kind of follows changes that many in the trade had been anticipating. Yesterday, CONAB, the Brazilian crop agency, dropped its production number for soybeans slightly. The one maybe surprise in this month's report was that USDA left its corn production number for Brazil unchanged. That means they're a little bit maybe behind where a lot of the trade estimates are for Brazilian corn, but we're also not really into the heart of Brazilian corn production with that second safrinha crop yet. So that was one change that we saw in the report. Argentina supply and demand picture for corn and soybeans was left unchanged. USDA did bump its Ukraine corn production and export numbers up by 1 million metric tons, maybe seeing that the grain corridor progress that has been made in the last months means maybe a slight adjustment to Ukrainian supply moving to the world market. But overall, broad picture, these were pretty minor changes in the overall supply and demand balance. Where we might get some bigger fireworks is in that January report that's coming up in a month's time.
Now, tell me about the January report and historically what that means to the marketplace.
It's a big one. It's a big one because USDA packs a lot into that January report. In early mid January, they report not only world agricultural supply and demand estimates, like they put out today, but also their key December 1 grain stocks estimate, which really kind of tells us about how much available supply we'll have here in the U.S. that needs to kind of be rationed out through the rest of the marketing year, along with updated production numbers for this past year that kind of really kind of set the tone for what's going to happen in the next 6 months as we move through the remainder of the year.
And the winter wheat acreage figures as well. So there are really four reports that will come out on that day.
Indeed.
When you think about the grain stocks number that we've been using for this first quarter of the year to this point, up to December 1, will it show large usage for corn and soybeans? What do you think it will look like?
When we get that December 1 stocks number, I mean, we can learn something about sort of how much we've, implicitly used up right around harvest. That one's kind of really more of a tone setting thing for me to think about how we move through the rest of the year. And then when we get the March stocks number, we can really think about, what was the implied usage of corn during the marketing year? How are we sort of rationing supplies out over time?
So Q1, Q2 usually are sort of front loaded, I guess, on usage for corn. Is that correct? And the way to think about it?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, in terms of, also part of what we think of as usage is not just sort of corn processed here in the U.S., but exports. And typically we've got to front load our export program more so for soybeans than for corn because supplies coming out of South America later in the marketing year. And this sort of makes sense in the context of, how much do we want to store? Well, we want to store only what we need to get us through to that next marketing year, to that next harvest. And we'd want to sort of minimize storage costs to the extent we can. So we're going to try and, the incentive for everyone is to try and move grain into the supply chain as quickly as possible.
Can you discuss the consumption functions for corn and then for soybeans? So what do they look like for exports, feed usage, and ethanol production in the United States?
Yeah, I really sort of view it as kind of a three-legged stool for corn, where we've got, feed usage, other domestic usage, which is principally ethanol, and then the export program. The export program is really the smallest, but it's the one that can kind of flex the most and where we have sort of the potentially the most volatility. So that's the one where I think we'll probably be watching the most closely because it tends to move the most and it tends to be sort of that residual source of demand that, if we have abundant supplies, that's where we kind of need to get some movement in order to use up a big crop.
In soybeans, crush the last couple of marketing years has been on a record pace domestically. Is that the case again this year?
That's my sense. With soybean crush, a little bit of uncertainty. My colleague Scott Irwin will definitely say that we're potentially looking for a reckoning in sort of over domestic soybean crush. There's been a lot of sort of crush demand in anticipation of strong, usage for bio-based diesel. Where this goes from here, whether we sort of realize all of those expectations or not, is kind of an open question.
That's Joe Jansen. He's an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. By the way, Joe will join us next week on Friday at the Farm Assets Conference. You can too, but you need to get your tickets today. Don't wait. The prices will change by the end of the weekend at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu or willag.org. Pre-registration will close soon enough. Come see Joe Jansen and the rest of the Farm Doc team and many others. The whole of the agenda is online. Now let's turn our attention to Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. I spoke with him not long after the reports were released this morning and asked him about his early assessment.
Yeah, I mean, I think the takeaway is, Todd, there was not a lot that was bullish in the report. I think it all came in about as expected. The Brazil bean number down 2 million tons, I think, was a little bit disappointment to the market. We did see them have small tweaks higher in corn and wheat demand by 25 million bushels each, and that went right to a corresponding cutout or cut in the carryout. But I think all that was pretty well expected, and we rallied into the report. And now the immediate reaction is, kind of a disappointment, buy the rumor, sell the fact type of trade here. So, you know, I think for the time being, though, the market's on fairly, you know, kind of a fair value, even keel right now, maybe correcting a little bit of the recent rally that we've seen across especially the corn and the wheat market right now.
There will be farmers that are worried, particularly that they have not marketed enough of their crop at a high enough price. Went into the harvest season thinking that, hey, I can wait it out. I'll store it. I've got plenty of cash on hand. And now we're approaching the end of the calendar year. Do they look out and try to carry further into January, February, March, maybe all the way out to July?
Yeah, I think that's a case-by-case you know, decision, Todd. I think for some operations, if you're carrying you know, the inventory on farm storage, then it may be a strong case, or maybe a strong case, to carry that all the way out into, you know, May, June, July. You know, it also depends on how much operating, you know, money you're carrying, and how much debt you're carrying, what interest, you know, calculation you use. So it's a case-by-case scenario, but it is certainly something that you want to pencil out, because in a lot of cases, it does pay you to sell that carry and hold that crop out ahead because there's so much carry in the market, but not in every case. So I think it's, you know, case-by-case scenario, crunch the numbers, put a pencil to it, and don't, I guess, rule out holding it out a little bit longer, because it may indeed pay you to do so.
I know this is in part what you do with your producers when you sit down with them. Have you been sitting down with them early in this winter time frame, as we begin to get into it, trying to decide what they should do with crop they have not yet marketed?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's part of the discussion right now. Where do we market that crop? You know, what's our storage situation? What's our cash flow needs? You know, just talking about that carry situation that you just asked me about, setting some targets out there. I think it's important to have, you know, offers resting above the market at strategic points on the chart, much like we saw here recently this week. Corn had put a nice rally in, got up north of 490. You know, didn't necessarily have bearish information today on this report, but now we're selling off and several cents under that. So if your offer's in above the market as part of your plan, it's going to get picked off on the rallies. And I still think that's something we can expect going into the end of the year, first part of the new year. We're at the time frame here seasonally where we can see some rallies, even though it's a big crop and we have plenty of supply. It doesn't mean we can't have rallies, but you have to have a plan. You got to have your offers in. You got to know what you're going to take on the rest of your unpriced inventory.
Yeah, so I know that you talk to them about their inventory, their costs, those sorts of things. Numbers that they have, what do you tell them about those target prices above the marketplace, and where have you set them for both corn and soybeans?
Yeah, as far as corn goes, Todd, we're looking, and again, this depends on when you're going to, how far you're going to carry this this crop out. So I'll give you some targets on the March. If you're going to carry that out further, obviously there'd be some you know, additional premiums you'd need to put on that for the carry in the market. But really up towards $5 to $5.15 on the March is kind of a zone that we think you ought to have some scale-up offers in there. There's probably an outside chance. There's some retracement levels north of there, back up closer to $5.30, $5.35. I think that would definitely take some real problems with the second crop Brazil corn season that's out ahead of us to hit some of those upper targets. But I think $5 and above, from 5 to 5.15 essentially, I think you should have several layers of offers working in the market. And likewise, on new crop corn, I don't think it's too soon to think about new crop corn. 5.25 to 5.35 is kind of the zone we see that a person needs to, you know, get a little more serious about marketing some new crop corn. As far as the beans go, that's a little bit dicier, right? Because we've put some weather premium in the market already from the South American drought. We've backed off of that, you know, 60, 70 cents now. I think it's a case-by-case scenario where if we see rallies back towards, say, 1350 to 1370 on the January contract, that would get you closer to, say, closer to $14 on the March, that's probably an area to be getting a lot more serious as far as marketing some old crop bushels, the beans we just harvested. $13 to $13.20 on the new crop November seems to be the zone that makes some sense to us to take a lot more action on new crop beans at this point.
Let's talk a little bit about demand consumption and what that looks like. Exports increased for corn by 25 million bushels. The Chinese have been buyers of corn, particularly from Brazil, in a larger than expected way, or a larger way than they have in the past, for just corn in general on the marketplace. Do you think that the Chinese will be in the marketplace for U.S. corn, or just their purchases from Brazil will continue to have a positive impact on the corn market?
Yeah, I do, Todd. First and foremost, I think there's some logistic issues with freight rates down in the Southern Hemisphere, and there's been some talk that China may be in the process of kind of washing out of some of those Brazilian corn purchases, or switching origin from Brazil to the United States just because of a freight cost situation. We did see some rumors this week about maybe China purchasing some corn, and today we saw the Chinese purchase of U.S. beans, wheat, and unknown to corn, and sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. So they may, in fact, already be purchasing some U.S. corn. I think that's kind of been part of what's been in this most recent, 10, 15-cent rally off the lows over the last week in the corn market. Sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire, and that unknown purchase this morning, kind of smells like maybe it could be China at the end result that bought that corn this morning.
Anything else you've been talking with producers or about, or that you want to make sure folks understand as it's related to today's USDA report or the fundamentals of the marketplace in general?
Yeah, I think the one thing is that, I've been talking to people about is the fact that we're kind of slowly making this transition from the past few years where we've been a really tight stock situation. And now, even with the problems in Brazil, with Argentina coming back on and looking like they're going to have at least an average type crop down there, we're going into a supply building mode, it looks like, over the next couple of years. So I think producers need to be thinking a little differently than they have the last few years, being a little more aggressive on the rallies, thinking earlier than normal about protecting new crop profitability. And based on where inputs are, it still does look like, with inputs coming down for this 24 crop, that there's still going to be some good opportunities for some profitability out there. So it's just a really difficult mind game, I guess, if you want to call it that, Todd, for producers that still have old crop bushels to market, for them to focus on new crop at the same time. But I think that's going to be really important. So where we're giving opportunities to market and finish up 23 sales at the same time, we need to be looking most likely at starting and getting more aggressive on the 24 because of that profitability out there.
One note there, does that mean that you are marketing sooner rather than later, potentially on both of those crop years?
Yes.
And I mean by faster than you have.
Yes, I think sooner and faster, Todd. That's probably a better way of putting my long-winded answer to you. And I think that's a mindset that is a little bit different than what most producers are used to the last few years. They've been paid to be really patient and wait as far as marketing goes, sitting back on their heels. And I think in my mind, we've turned that pendulum a little bit to where we need to kind of think about it sooner and more aggressively than what we have in the past. I still think there's a window here between, say, right now, right ahead of Christmas, to maybe late February, first part of March, that we've got some window of opportunity for some upside in the market. But I think as producers, we need to really get more aggressive on that rally if we see it in that window to clean up our old crop and at the same time get probably much more aggressive than what we have been in the last 3 or 4 years at protecting new crop as well.
Chip Nellinger is with Blue Reef Agri Marketing. Now let's turn our attention to Sherman Newland. He's with Risk Management Commodities. He's in Hudsonville, Illinois. Hi, Sherman. Thank you for being with us. As I was wrapping up with Chip, I asked him if his discussion points with farmers was really that they should market sooner and faster both, and he said yes. I'm wondering what you're thinking.
I don't disagree with that per se. I mean, hopefully, I was kind of hoping we could get some sort of year-end rally, going into the 1st of January or that January report, because interest on money is one thing. You got to think about that, whether you're collecting interest or paying interest. So You know, beans especially, I'd like to see them a nice little pop a little bit higher. And we still may get it before the end of the year. I mean, like you and me talked about a little bit, but, you know, the weather is still a factor down there in Brazil. And it may be more concerning for the corn market eventually than soybeans here. But I would think sooner rather than later, you know, and if a guy needs to come back in and sees a need that this market might go up, I would, you know, sure entertain thought of buying some call options for that purpose. Probably, you know, but maybe more so in corn because it may have a little bit more pop to it eventually if the weather really gets, you know, to be a situation down there, and because there's so many shorts in the corn market. So, but yeah, I would probably say sooner rather than later.
Today's report, really quiet, and that sets us up for January. USDA collecting data from farmers now, about 70,000 of them in surveys. Those numbers will be incorporated into the January figures, asking about yields and acreage both. Will there be much in the way of changes, do you think, once we get to that final crop production report?
I don't know. Maybe a little bit. I don't know about so much in beans, but I could see the corn number maybe getting a little bit bigger. You know, so it seemed like you talked to some of these fellows and, you know, some of these other states, and they seem to have some really good production in corn. You know, you're talking record corn in spots in Kentucky and Ohio and some of these outlying states. So I don't look for a big drop, I guess, in either one, and maybe a tick up in the corn side of the production. I know around here it wasn't overly exciting. I mean, we had such a drought, and we're still in a big drought here. I mean, we had average crops here on our farm, more or less. But, you know, I know a lot of places had some decent yields around the country.
When you look around your area and southern Illinois, southern and parts of Indiana, you're in the Terre Haute area, do you see more soft red winter wheat acres in the ground this fall than in the past or not?
No. Quick and simple, no. I don't. And actually, I didn't plant any wheat this year, and I planted wheat every year for the last 13 years straight. I said I was done with it. So, no, I didn't plant any wheat, and I guess I really don't see a whole lot of extra. I think acres are going to be down on the soft red winter wheat, personally.
Why is that the case? Just price?
Price more than anything. Rotation, you know, some of the areas where I was planting wheat, you know, was under irrigation, and I think I can do better with some other crops under irrigation than I can the wheat crop. I think a lot of guys just more or less were giving up on it because of the price. And so that's it.
That's it. That means that's probably not good for corn and or beans. Does that mean, what are you thinking about acreage then?
If
that's particularly widespread, it's not
right.
That
yeah,
good. And I'm going to guess because it's price related, it may very well be.
It very well could be. I mean, I think just from sheer rotation, because we had so much corn acres this year, Todd, I just think you're going to see less corn acres, you know, and more bean acres, and that has to do to me with the price as well. You know, you're looking at new crop beans. At one time, we were over $13. You know, and corn's not a bad price either. I mean, if we can push up a little bit more. But I think prices are down, and I think, you know, guys are going to look to go back to more rotation. So I think corn acres are going to come down a little bit, and, you know, you're going to see bean acres increase.
That's for soft red winter wheat. Hard red winter wheat, different story or not?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you on the hard red winter wheat side of it. You know, maybe the guys up north, in that spring wheat area, might plant a little bit more. A lot of that will depend on, you know, what the weather looks like. But, you know, they had a pretty good year out west, I think, on some of the crops. So they those acres may stay. And those prices are, you know, higher than what you're getting for the soft red. So, but, you know, you can change that for the spring wheat.
I suppose this, again, is something we'll know more about in those January reports from USDA. Might be the one we need to watch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one there definitely could be a big mover. You know, of course, we got to see what we do between now and then, price wise. I mean, a lot of times if you're selling off into that report hard, you know, you might get a reaction back to the upside. But that one there, yeah, you could see some movement in those, you know, across the board. you know, in between then, we still have a lot of export data to go through. I mean, China's been buying a lot of wheat, Todd. I mean, gosh, we sold, they bought 41 million bushels this week alone. So, well, you know, we'll see if they come in next week and continue to buy. I don't know if that's going to happen, but so far things have been pretty good on the buy side from China.
Does wheat have more upside potential at this point? I mean, it's been moving again, but does it have more upside potential than corn and or soybean?
I mean, it's had a heck of a run. I mean, you know, we ran into some major moving averages. I mean, could we get higher, you know, if China would come in and you know, buy another, million metric ton next week or the week after and things get excited and they start buying some corn? I think the potential is, you know, for some more short covering. I don't think the funds are going to flip around and go long wheat. I do think there's more upside there. But I think I'm not bullish corn. Don't get me wrong. I'm not super bullish corn because we've got a 2 billion bushel carryout. But, you know, if you could get some weather issues continue to go in South America and you could pick up some export sales a little bit more, I think you could get the corn market excited to where, you know, we could get at least new crop corn, you know, over $5 so we could start locking in some fall or January 25 needs. You know, maybe we could get close to $5 cash for old crop corn. But basis really hasn't been moving here a lot lately. I mean, it tightened up a little bit once we got after harvest. But now lately it's just been sitting pretty tight because, you know, elevators are full and they don't need to bid up for stuff.
Well, I have a question about that. It's related to the Ohio River, since you mentioned you were in a dry area. 70% of the river flow south of the confluence, or the lower Mississippi, I believe, comes from the Ohio River. Are we still set up for an issue yet this export season because of low water conditions?
Oh, yeah. I think most definitely we are. We're just not getting the rain, you know, up in through here to fill the rivers the way we need. So that's going to be a problem. I mean, we're 10 inches behind normal right here where we're at. And I don't know if that's going to get corrected before springtime or not. It sure doesn't act like it's going to. And I think that's going to be a concern. You know, farmers are talking about that already. But yeah, as far as rivers go, I think it's definitely going to be an issue.
What's that tell you? Everything we've talked about what farmers should be considering differently this winter than they have in the past two or three.
I mean, you know, guys have had a couple, three pretty good years. I mean, I know some areas are down on yield and prices, and they didn't make a lot of the, you know, forward sales probably the way they needed to. They're sitting on a lot of crop, you know, that's unpriced. So I would, you know, pick some targets out there and just, you know, put in some orders for sure above the market, whether it's $5 or wherever for corn. You know, and 13 plus or 13.40 for some cash old crop soybeans, and just have those in. But I think guys are going to have to be looking at forward marketing for the 24 crop a little bit more than we have here in the past, because you know, again, with the 2 billion bushel carryout, it's going to take something to get the market excited, and that's probably going to have to be weather. I don't know if we're going to get enough demand news to push this thing substantially higher. But again, I think you're going to have to be looking the forward sale probably more this time this year than we did this past year.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org or look it up in your favorite podcast applications. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities, and Joe Jansen from the University of Illinois. By the way, don't forget Joe will be there with us at the Farm Assets Conference next Friday, December the 15th at the I Hotel in Champaign. You can find the full agenda online again, where willag.org, or at the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.